March, and welcome to this afternoon's session. As part of the introduction to clerkship week, my name is Dr. Mark Smilovich. I'm a cardiologist at the Royal Vic and unit chair for Physicianship 3. I just want to take a couple of minutes to outline the session this afternoon. I've been looking at the schedule for the week. It seems quite full and very, task-oriented. A lot of sessions on prescribing meds, dealing with IVs, interpreting blood gases, reading ECGs, two sessions on ECGs. I'm happy to see that. And I think, this session is a slightly less formal. It's going to be a panel discussion format. And just before I bring up the panel, the idea is to, it's a session where we benefit from learning from each other. The panel will consist of two fourth-year students, two second-year residents, one from medicine, one from surgery, and an attending staff in internal medicine and intensive care. And I'll be facilitating some questions for the panel regarding clerkship, the experience of clerkship, and the experience of supervising students. And throughout the session, there'll be opportunity for you to comment and to ask questions of the panel. So please, I'd encourage you, this is a rare opportunity to gain insight from those that have been through this path, some more recently, some years ago. But everyone here is involved, has had the experience of clerkship, and is involved in teaching students as well. And so, as part of the theme of Orientation Week, you'll have, I'm sure, many opportunities for orientation sessions when you begin your specific rotations. And I'd just like to start by sharing one of my experiences in clerkship. Early 1980s, about 30 years ago, a group of six of us were starting our clerkship in psychiatry at the Allen on one of the brief therapy units. We were pretty excited. And we showed up according to the schedule we've received, and we were greeted at the ward by a young woman who welcomed us and said, "You must be the new students. Come with me. We'll begin the orientation." And we proceeded to get a tour of the ward station. We learned where all the forms were, where all the charts were, how the charting system worked, how requisitions were managed. We then proceeded to take a tour of the ward and the different areas of the unit. We made our way back to the clerk station, and we're also told, where we keep cigarettes. Sometimes we keep cigarettes for the patients. And just as this orientation session was nearing completion, two orderlies came and took her and escorted her back to her room. And I kid you not, now despite that, it was one of the best, if not the best, orientation session that I have ever experienced. So there is value in a good orientation, regardless of where it comes from. So with that background, I'd just like to ask the panel members to come up and take seats at the table. I'd like you in the center. These guys are genuine, I can vouch for it. No one's going to come and take them away. I hope not. So, really, we've gathered this esteemed panel together to share their experience, a wealth of experience with you. And I'd like to start just by asking each one of you to just briefly introduce yourself in terms of who you are, what you are doing right now, and also, if you would comment on why you agreed to participate in this session. And we can start right here with Deepak.
So my name is Deepak. I'm a fourth-year medical student, as you know now. I'm doing urology right now. And what was the fourth question?
Why did you agree to participate?
Because I felt like I had something that might be useful for you guys to know.
Good. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tanya Castellino. I'm an R2 in general surgery. I did my medical school here at McGill, also did undergrad at McGill. Right now I'm doing a general surgery rotation at St. Mary's Hospital, so those of you who are starting with us next week, get ready to work hard. And I agreed because I also feel like I have something that I can contribute before you start your clerkship.
Hi, my name is David Hornstein. I'm an internist and intensivist and work at the Montreal General, so I spend my time between internal medicine and intensive care. And what was the second question? Yeah, so I did this last year and I had absolutely no idea why I was coming here, and Mark just kept saying, "That's okay, it's, you know, just show up, it'll be okay." And it actually was. It was a fun session, so I hope we can do the same, and if anything, maybe make you guys feel a little bit more comfortable as you're entering the exciting and scary part. And I guess by the gray hair, you can tell that I'm one of the guys that was around, what did you say, not so recently?
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Mireille Sayeg. I'm one of the R2s based at the Vic in Internal Medicine. I did my med school at McGill. The reason I decided to come to this panel is because I know clerkship can be a bit overwhelming, so it's more to guide you guys through it when you start.
Hi, everyone. I know some of you. My name is Samantha Balas. I'm a Med 4 student. Did my undergrad here, and now I'm doing a rotation in dermatology. I remember this session last year, and I remember that what I did pay attention to was really useful to my Med 3, and it's a big year, so there's a lot of challenges and exciting new things ahead, and I felt that we could teach you, hopefully, a lot, but of course you'll gain much more from going through the motions yourselves.
Good, thanks. Thanks for that background. And I'd just like to open. The first question I have for the panel is, I'd like you to think about and share with us what you remember about the way you were feeling just before starting clerkship. Remember what it was like to be sitting in these seats, and if you can share that, and then you know, we'll open it up and see if there's any similarities to what you guys are going through right now. We can start it with you, Samantha.
Okay. So I wrote my USMLE last summer, and then I had about 3 weeks off. I didn't study anything in those 3 weeks, and I remember feeling regretful. Oh, my God, I'm starting internal medicine. I don't know anything, but I didn't want to. I said, this is my summer. It's going to be fine. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't even want to wear my white coat. I was scared.
How about you, Miranda?
I guess the same as Samantha. I didn't know what to expect. It's a bit different than Med 2, as you will soon find out, but it's more exciting. You have more responsibility. You have more, like, you're closer to your patients. So I didn't know what to expect, and it was not exactly what I had expected, but it's great.
I remember it. I remember being both excited and terrified. Shouldn't be terrified, although that's normal because you don't exactly know what you're about to hit. But I remember being excited because I used to sit up in the back of this room, in the big room, and I was kind of, you know, lecture after lecture, but this was going to be totally different. So it is going to be totally different. You're going to get in the hospitals, and believe it or not, you actually matter a lot. And so I looked forward to it.
I was feeling a little tachycardic, diaphoretic, stressed, and also excited about what was to come. It's very exciting to leave the classroom and finally get out into some form of practice and seeing patients and doing what we all really came here to do. So it was a mix of everything.
So I actually remember talking to Samantha when we finished BOM, and she was like, yes, we finished BOM, and I was like, hard work starts now, and it does, and basically, I was kind of in the back row over there, and that's kind of where I was for the first 2 years, so I started off with peds, and the only thing I knew about peds was they're not little adults. I don't know what what that means. I still don't know what that means. But that's what I kind of walked in with my first day into PZR, and yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. But you get used to it.
So I think there's a recurrent expression of both excitement and apprehension, which is very common. You know, for the reasons that were discussed, this is a big change. This is a change in environment as well. Would it be fair, show of hands, the number of people that feel excited about starting clerkship? I think that's nice to see. Apprehensive? Good, yeah. And that's to be expected. I just want to pick up and emphasize something that David mentioned about the part that you matter. That's really important. And don't underestimate just how much you matter. You know, time and time we hear, and to this day when I often go in as a consultant on the ward and I ask a patient who's their doctor, it's the medical student that they identify immediately as their treating physician. So avoid the kind of just a medical student mindset, or what I call JAMS, jams. Don't jam. Just, you know, remember that you do matter. Just a medical student, I could say, you know, I'm just a cardiologist. And I'll put that in context. You know, I just was rounding yesterday at one of the rehab hospitals where I focus on cardiac rehabilitation. And like many patients, they don't always... You know, they know I'm a physician, but and that I'm there to check on them, but they don't hesitate to show me their abdominal wounds or how their, you know, their hip problems. And my tendency is to kind of say, well, I'm just the cardiologist. You've got to talk to someone else. But when I find myself heading down that route, I usually just recognize it, stop, listen to what they have to say, and if it's something that I can address with some degree of competency, I will attempt to do that. Otherwise, I'll let them know that I'll refer that issue to the appropriate person. So, you know, if there's something, or if a patient asks you something that you don't feel comfortable dealing with, hear them out, and still, you know, as long as you can reassure that the issue will be addressed, that can go a long way to reassure patients. That's just an example. But again, do not underestimate the impact that you have at this point with respect to patient care. It's enormous. Moving on, I'd like the question I want to ask of the panel is just to reflect on what some of the most satisfying or rewarding experiences of clerkship as a clerk, or it could be for those of you more senior in supervising students. Why don't we start with David?
You mean in supervising?
It could be if there was an event as a clerk that you recall as being satisfying, I'll take that. Or in terms of just working with students as well.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to care. And I know it sounds wishy-washy, but or sort of soft, but I think all of us at each level, it doesn't matter what we know. It doesn't matter what you know, and it doesn't matter what you don't know. It only matters if you care, because I like to practice what I call GBM, which you have jams. I have GBM, which is grandmother-based medicine, which is sort of what your grandmother would ask you if you went home and said, hey, I saw somebody, that she'd ask you, okay, where did he come from? What is he like? How's he feeling? You know, that kind of stuff is really important. It's really important. And if you care, you're going to do something good for the person on the other end of that interaction. So for me, it was those early experiences where I could see that just having cared, and I didn't really do anything for the disease, and all of a sudden it had an impact on somebody. It made a big impact on me.
Actually, if I could just take where you left off, I have a specific story to share where it illustrates exactly what you were saying. So I did my family medicine in Témiscaming, and quite recently, 3 months ago. And there was one patient that came into the emergency room who had lost weight, was feeling weak and muscle pains, and he had been seen actually already a few times in the emergency room in the preceding weeks. And no one really knew what was going on. He had some blood tests. They knew that his liver function enzymes were really high. I didn't even know what that meant. And I saw him, and he came maybe 4 times in my month period being up north. And I remember, finally, I said, you know what, let's sit down and take a full history. And I really asked him all the questions, did the whole review of systems, everything I could think of, you know, the whole full physical exam. And by that time, I had gotten to know him and his wife. We were already on a first-name basis. And I told him, look, I'm presenting you at rounds. We're going to discuss it with the team. So that's why I want to be very complete, and you'll have your setup of labs taken tomorrow. But we still don't know exactly what you have. So, of course, I presented him at rounds. No one had a clue. Okay? We thoroughly investigated. I tried to talk about liver enzymes. Nothing was matching up quite, and he was still not doing well. And it just so happens that the very last day that I was there, his wife came by and dropped off a gift for me. And she wrote in the card, thank you so much for your care and your patience, Samantha. And I just felt like, you know, what had I done? We didn't find out what was wrong with him. He was still feeling weak and losing weight. But the fact was that they felt that I was present, that I wanted to know what was going on, that I wanted to help as much as I can. And in fact, I called up this patient when I came home to Montreal, and they still don't know, unfortunately, but he was very happy to hear from me. And that was a really, really rewarding experience as a medical student.
Mireille, can you reflect on some of the most satisfying experiences in clerkship or working with students?
I have another little story. I'll be a bit shorter, but I think it's the same. You know, I had this patient. I was convinced he had coronary artery disease from the typical story. And, you know, I pushed for him. I pushed for investigation, and then he gets the gold standard cath, and it's all normal. But, you know, in the end, we changed the diagnosis because it was not this. But that patient, just like Samantha said, you know, it's just the fact, like, taking the time to listen to them, getting a full story, going to the bottom of things, even though you're not going to find the actual diagnosis, that's what matters. You know, it's just the fact that you're caring about their story. So that was, and then I got a little card. But that goes to tell you that it is satisfying when, and you get that satisfaction from the patient, and you end up knowing that you went beyond for them.
Yeah, I think it, and people sense that when you care, and I think those are both great examples. It's very much appreciated. Sometimes we're so focused on nailing the diagnosis, figuring it out. That's important, but being there, being present, being attentive to the patient's needs is always important. Tanya, can you comment on some of your most satisfying experiences in clerkship or working with students?
In clerkship, I had similar experiences to Mireille and Samantha, where you really do matter as medical students. You spend the most time with the patients because you have the time. Residents are running around, staff are running around doing things and setting stuff up for patients, and we're the ones who go and check on them, check their vitals, check their outputs, etc., as students, and you talk to them, spend time with them. So they do appreciate you, and sometimes they give you a card when they leave the hospital. But one of the most satisfying experiences that I had in clerkship was a patient who actually passed away. He was a chronic renal failure patient, and he was on dialysis, and he was fed up with everything, and he decided that he wanted to withdraw the dialysis. And his family had a lot of difficulty accepting this decision, but it was his decision, and he was competent to make it. So I just sort of spent a lot of time with him and with his family, supporting them through this difficult time. And he passed away a few days later after they withdrew the dialysis. So just making him feel comfortable and making sure everything was done for the family, they really appreciated all of my efforts and the efforts of the team. So we can help in more ways than finding a diagnosis.
Thank you. And Deepak.
So you probably noticed the most satisfying thing for a lot of us is the physicianship aspect, and I would agree as well. Because I'm sure everybody over here will say at some point they're here because they want to help people, and this is kind of what we're all leading into. We are here because we care about people, and if I spoke about a specific experience myself, it would also be about a patient that passed away. The patient had a a family of like 15 people that weren't really sure about what was going on, and the patient was decompensating really quickly, and they had no idea, no one talked to them. As you said, all the residents are busy trying to like take care of a lot of other things. The staff was away in clinics, and it was me and another medical student on the floor, and it was one of my patients, so I knew her well. It was pretty satisfying to finally help them all come together and realize what was going on, help them cope with what was going on, and she passed away early the next morning. But at least because I was there, the family was aware, and the family was able to at least prepare themselves a little bit for what came. And even though it didn't, you know, it ended in tragedy, but it was still very satisfying that I helped the family, if not the patient.
Absolutely. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these topics that we've discussed so far? It could be general for the panel, or it could be specific about any of the particular stories. Feel free to, you know, raise your hands at any point, because I'd like you to take full advantage of the opportunity, you know, of having this panel here and sharing their experience. So any questions about what you've just heard so far? Do any of you have any feelings that have not been expressed? I mean, the generalized excitement and apprehension, I think, is fairly ubiquitous. But anybody else have any other, you know, thoughts that they're going through, you know, at this point in time before starting clerkship that you want to raise to the class, to myself, to the panel? I mean, there's a lot of uncertainties. I think a lot of time what helps is to talk to people that have just gone through what you're going to go through, whether it's another student or senior. I mean, you always have the formal agenda, the formal outlines and goals and objectives, but it's always helpful to get, you know, the bottom line from someone who's actually been in the field. So, yeah, right up here.
This is more of a question, similar to how you just went around and reflected on memories of satisfaction. Be able to reflect on memories of embarrassment?
That's the next item on there. Well, that's the next thing. So embarrassment specifically, was going to ask about some of the more difficult or challenging experiences, but why don't we go with that?
Also, I guess, how that resolved, like the feeling of embarrassment, but then sort of what followed after that.
Okay, good. And then we'll come there. I know there was another question up top. We'll come back. Does anybody want to respond to that? Does anyone remember feeling embarrassed about a particular situation and how that evolved?
No, that never happens. Never happens. No, I remember, you know, to answer that specifically, I remember more a general feeling like maybe some of you are sitting there going, okay, shit, you know, I fooled them. I got in medical school. I'm able to, you know, I could do well on the exam, but now I'm going to hit the floors, and now that I'm blown, you know, that they're going to figure it out, you know? And I remember that feeling of complete inadequacy, like, oh, my God, not only don't I know where, you know, to order this or that, and my senior resident gives me a whole bunch of crap to do that, I have no clue, and I don't know anything about medicine. So you feel this sort of global inadequacy. And I know we're all going to sit here and go, that's normal. Okay, you're not totally inadequate, you're only partially inadequate. And I remain inadequate, and that's okay. So we all have, there's that level. I remember also feeling that I wasn't, if I had to say, I felt like, you know, I wasn't allowed to say I don't know, and that I had to know. And particularly in front of patients and families, you're going to get asked questions, you know, well, what about this new chemotherapy agent, and you've never even heard of it, and you have no clue. And I used to feel very embarrassed about having to say I don't know. And so I would kind of dance around it and, you know, try to fake my way out of it. And I guess as I got older and knew that I knew less and less, I started to say it more and more that I didn't know. And I guess my message is, it's not what you know. It's if you're engaged with that person that you can say, you know what, I don't know, but let me find out, or let me get somebody that can help. And you get around that embarrassment of the I don't know. I think that's part of it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I can add to that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things we do there's a lot of things we do not know, and I think it's very dangerous to see something you're not sure about, especially with patients. Like patients, they deal with students, they deal with junior resident and senior resident and staff. And I think from my experience, you'd rather say that you do not know than say something that will end up being false, and you kind of lose a little trust there. So there's nothing wrong about saying, I'm a trainee, I'm going to ask my supervisor, I am not sure. Because that can put you into some embarrassment. It could put the families and the patients to become angry as well, because, it's their health, it's very important to them.
Thank you. Any other thoughts or experiences? Embarrassing situation?
I can't think of just one. It happens on a daily basis.
I was going to say, as soon as you said embarrassed, I was like, I can write 2 books on that. That's every day. And it still happens every day. It happened this morning, too. It'll happen probably tomorrow morning as well. But you just kind of, you get used to it, and you get used to maintaining a professional attitude about it and going out and finding the information and coming back to whoever asked the question. So, did you say, do you get used to it, or?
I was asking,
how do you deal with it?
Which is probably a good sign. But also, I was just curious also how the resolution afterward, if there was a particular story you can remember, that feeling of embarrassment, and then how long it lasts, say, or what would come next, how you go, anything of all of that.
I think that maybe I hadn't thought of it that way, but I used to feel like I was a performer to some degree, and you're faking it, and you have to look all knowledgeable in the white coat and all that with the little stain from the sandwich on it. But I don't think you need to feel that way. I would encourage you to try to just be totally honest, and you're not unknowledgeable. You guys are very smart people who've come a hell of a long way, and you've learned some stuff, and you are learning. And you have something to bring to people, and it's okay to not know certain things of it. If you know who this person is and who they live with and what's really hurting them, that's good. That's really good. And you're probably going to know perhaps a lot more than your senior residents, who are so running around trying to do things that they forgot to figure out who the patient was. So my way out of that kind of feeling of inadequacy and embarrassment was to realize, hey, I could just be myself, and if I'm committed to this person that's in the bed there, then I could probably do something for them in one way or another. And that's kind of the way out. I used to do that with problems that I didn't understand either, and the nurse would say, I'm trying to remember, the blood pressure is low, and I know, what's that all about, or he has a cough, and I just kind of run away from something that I didn't know. I used to do this. And that always comes back and bites you. So I realized when I didn't know, and it was something, I'd go and I'd talk to my resident and go, hey, something, what do you think? And then all of a sudden we're together in something. So you're not alone, you're not supposed to know everything, and if you're committed to helping, you'd be fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice. And I think that's an important message, that you're not expected to know everything, and it is okay. I think we kind of put a lot of, very high standards for ourselves often, and that's throughout our training and careers. And to this day, sometimes patients will bring me something that someone sent them online, and ask me if I've heard of this new treatment for hyperlipidemia. It's much better than statins. And if I don't know, I'll say I don't know, but I'll look into it and I'll get back to you. And I think it's okay to be comfortable to saying, that you don't know something, but there is a process to follow through. And again, remember that you're not alone. You're working in teams, and there is you're very well supported in terms of, your fellow students and residents and attending staff. There was another hand up on the top on the other side of the stairs. Yeah?
I was going to ask, what's the toughest part of the transition from classroom?
So the question is, what's the toughest part of the transition from the classroom to clerkship and these new responsibilities? Anybody want to take that?
Sure.
So just to give a background, I started with internal med first. That was my first rotation. And I think the hardest part was knowing what a medical system looks like, knowing who do you ask the question to, where do you get the form, how do you fill out this consult, and really, what are you supposed to do next? That was the hardest transition. You know, they'll tell you, okay, for example, you guys have to come in at 7:15 and pre-round on your patients, and then we're rounding as a team. So, okay, you get the information that you think is adequate, you maybe check some labs, but then something is off or the patient tells you something that you don't really understand and you're like, okay, what do I do? So that was the hardest part, like, do I ask, do I forget about it, do I write it, do I look into it? It's just like there's so many things hitting you at once, and sometimes it's hard to know who to ask also. Like, but I find that the more open you are with the other med students that you're with and your residents in asking, like, okay, where do I get this or how do I write this, the easier it will come. Even though that is kind of embarrassing to ask, it's okay. You're not expected to know how to do these things right at the start.
Like on similar lines, we don't realize it when we're in the system, but it's a lot of adaptation. You're going to change every month, new nurses, new team, new way of thinking, new way of doing things, and we don't realize, but you know, you get comfortable at the end of your month and kind of, you know, understand what you're doing, you're good with one subject, and then bam, you're restarting from zero. And that's a lot. It is a lot, especially if you don't know who to go to. So I think that's important. You know, you need to be strong within like students, you need to feel comfortable to go for it to your resident and to your staff. But that was something that I did not realize while I was in clerkship, but in retrospect I was like, that's why I was so tired. You know, it's a lot of adaptation. The other thing is that you're gonna be busy most of the time, and it's not easy to find time to study, although you're still in med school and you should still try to study at night. So that was difficult for me initially on my first rotations, balancing the, you know, clinical exposure and, you know, your responsibilities in the hospital. But then at some point you have to be like, okay, am I learning? Am I learning enough? And if you get that feeling that, no, I'm not, then you should kind of, you know, step back and think through and go to your residents and let them know that you need more time to study. It's not easy to do, but I think you should be recognizing when that happens.
Yeah, I think what I would say is the hardest sort of part, I think it's a really good question, is that we're just throwing the rule books out here. You've been in the class, quote unquote, for a couple of years, and you sort of grooved into a comfort zone. But now we're just throwing it all out. You're stepping way out of your comfort zones. And you're stepping into an area that has no rule book, because every single place is different. Every rotation, 10 med at the Vic is different than 15 at the general and then at the kids, and they're all different. And even within the same building, the experience will be different depending on the teams you're with. So it's really hard to write a rule book for that, because, you know, you might have this great R3 who's talking to you all the time, and your buddy might have somebody who doesn't talk to them. And similarly, like was echoed here, the nurses change and everything changes. So I think the hardest part is understanding that it's psychological. There's physical demands, but that's cool. But psychologically, there is no rule book, and that's okay. That's okay. You just got to learn from everybody every chance you get. It's very hard to be, you mentioned, I want to just, it's very hard to be, to say, okay, I'm going to study chapters 1 to 17 of, you know, the left foot specialist. You can't do that in clerkship. You have to kind of learn around what you're doing. And everybody will say it, you know, read around your patients. But basically that's what, if you have the 10 minutes and you have the patient, you read around the patient. And that's probably the best organized thing you could do.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. It's a total sensory overload. Like, people are asking you questions, and you have no idea where you are. And you're like, what? You're asking me about what for this patient? For which patient? Is that my patient? Am I in charge of this person? So it's like there's a lot of sensory overload, and you need to be able to think quickly on your feet and answer questions, because a lot of the nurses will ask you stuff, coordinators will ask you stuff. So you have to adapt quickly, And don't be afraid to ask questions early, especially of your junior residents. Often the seniors and staff are busy dealing with other things, but the juniors should usually be around to help you guys out. So you should use us as a resource, and we will be happy to help you with anything, any questions or problems, concerns that you have. I agree with Mireille, she stole my point, that it's very difficult to find time to study because you're so tired. You're working longer hours and you're, you know, on your feet, running around. Carry snacks in your pockets because you won't always have time to eat. So, like, power bars and, you know, carrots and things are good to keep around. The other thing...
Don't keep them for weeks.
No, that
pocket.
Would not be good if they
Especially
start to
the
rot
carrots,
in your
the
pockets.
Carrots, yeah.
Non-perishable items only. The other thing is, yeah, you do work with lots of different people, and there's lots of different personalities out there, so you should just try to be nice to everyone, and people will not always be nice to you. So try not to take it personally, especially... You know, scrub nurses will yell at you when you do your surgical rotations that you've contaminated yourself and, oh my God, it's the end of the world and you have to unscrub and rescrub and change and they'll yell at you. No matter what you do, don't argue and just sort of try to make it easy for everyone to work with you, I think. It was difficult and intimidating for me because there were lots of people expecting so much from me when I was a clerk. But you get used to it fast, as with everything else.
I would like to reemphasize the physical aspect. I know you kind of fluffed it, but trust me, working like 60 to up to 110 hours a week is tough.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's tough, and you need to go home, and you probably really should study as well. So... Well, no, you can't cram for these exams. You might be on call the day before the exam. Yeah. So you don't get the day off before the exam to study, except for in surgery. But in other rotations, you don't get the day before the exam off to study. So basically, you'll be put under a lot of physical pressure. The mental pressure, I don't need to go through again because everybody just said it. And you won't have your lunch break necessarily, and snacks are super important because you don't know when your next meal is coming. And coffee, you always need to know where the coffee machines are, especially when it's past the cafeteria's closing time, things like that. So there's some, yeah, that makes it kind of harder to adapt psychologically when you push physically at the same time.
Okay. But hold on a minute. I have to just maybe disagree a little bit, okay? Yes, people will advise you to study every night. That never happens. It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to always, you know. It's true. There have been many times where I'm just really exhausted, both physically and emotionally, if I had a hard day, and I just can't open a book. And it's okay. You could do it the next day, or you could do it on the weekend. I think what Deepak is trying to emphasize is that, yeah, you can't cram, so that's obvious, but... Sometimes you just won't be up for it, and you just have to give yourself that time off. And the second point is about that time off. During the day, yeah, there might not be a set lunch hour, but nobody will ever tell you no when you ask for lunch. It might be embarrassing, and you think like, oh, you know, I'm making a bad impression. I'm going to get a meets expectations if I ask for lunch. That's BS, okay? I've gotten really good grades, and I've asked for lunch every single day in some rotations. It's okay. You could take your time. No one's going to be mad at you for that. At least it gives you a mental break, and you get your food, and it's fine. Okay?
Great. Thank you. So does that answer the question? In terms of you can see that the transition, it's a big transition. It's a big change, and things will happen a lot differently. One thing that I think that we heard throughout, I think I'll get to you in just a second, some valuable advice about knowing what's expected of you. That's important now, and that's important, excuse me, throughout your training. So as best you can, you know, you should receive goals and objectives before every rotation. But over and above that, it's helpful to approach whoever is supervising you, you know, on the first day or even before and saying, look, I just want to go over things, you know, what time do rounds start, where do rounds start, what time do we finish, you know, in terms of the schedule and responsibilities, that can go a long way towards kind of alleviating some of the uncertainties. in terms of what your roles and responsibilities are for any particular rotation. And as well, it's okay in a kind of mid-rotation to say, okay, look, you know, to talk with your supervisor, how am I doing, or, you know, how are things going, rather than waiting for the obligatory end of rotation evaluation and then being caught off guard. So stay on top of that. Be proactive. Ask what's expected of you. Ask how things are going. I think that can only reflect positively. Yeah, and there was a question over here. I'm just going to repeat the question. It was primarily aimed at the students about studying and resources that are available for studying.
I just want to get the first word in. Toronto notes for everything, and you can't go wrong.
Okay.
Do you want to elaborate?
It just has, well, at least if you like the format of how it's given, which is basically point form, it has all the information you need to do really well in all of your rotations. I don't think there's a rotation where it doesn't have enough information. So at least use that as your base.
Is everybody familiar with that? Pretty much, yeah? Good. Okay.
Okay. I didn't use Toronto Notes for everything, but for many rotations, it was like the only thing that I use, and it was enough. In every rotation, there will be residents and staff who could tell you specific books. Like there's a series called Case Files. There's blueprints for OBS and internal, for example. There's pre-test, which gives you like questions that you could practice for the NBME exams. By the way, there's two American exams that you'll be writing. It's internal and OBS-GYN. So those ones are...
And surgery.
And surgery?
Surgical subspecialties.
Sorry, yeah, we didn't get there yet. So so those ones are a little bit harder, but in terms of knowing, in terms of resources on the wards, UpToDate is the easiest one to use. Everybody uses it, and I personally found another good resource. It's called accessmedicine.com. If anyone has a VPN or you're in a McGill hospital, it has a whole bunch of textbooks. You type in a disease or condition or medication, and it'll give you the reference from the textbook. So it's really good for, like, internal med stuff.
Great. Thanks.
People will poo-poo UpToDate, but it's a pretty good resource. And also for surgery stuff, this is going to sound silly, but go to YouTube and just, like, type in lap coli, and you'll see, like, videos of surgeries. And it gives you a good idea of what the steps are and what to expect. And also surgical recall is good. It's a pocketbook. It's very heavy, but it's very, very useful.
And for internal, there's the, like, probably some of you have seen it, like a green book, the Massachusetts internal medicine book.
Pocket medicine, right?
I just want to say, Toronto Notes will not get you through internal medicine. That's the one thing that it won't get you through.
So get that book.
I have to rephrase. It'll give you the basics to, like, not look completely lost on the ward, but not for the exam.
For the exam, Step Up to Medicine is a good resource, and the question book is called MKSAP. But look, this is really overwhelming. Every rotation, you can ask your residents or students, guys, any good books, they'll tell you. And by the way, some of the students will read different resources for rotations, which is fine, as long as you're getting an overview. It's okay.
Great, thanks. Yes, right here.
How do we handle the process of making mistakes? Because we're not sure that we're not making mistakes.
Okay, the question is, how do we handle the process of making mistakes? Because we're not perfect. How do you deal with making mistakes? I think that's a great question, and I'll open that. How do you deal with that? Does that happen? If you do something that I guess was not expected or didn't turn out right, does anybody want to address that?
I think the most important thing that you need to do is be honest. Be honest with yourself and be honest with your patients, and then everything else will sort of fall into place. Just talk. Communication is super important. So talk to your residents, talk to your staff, talk to other people around, and see how you can prevent making the same kind of mistake in the future.
I think I would totally agree with that. Mistakes are a part of life, and it depends what we're talking about by mistakes. There can be medical errors. That's part of medical practice. You really can't get through medical practice without making a few errors. Judgment mistakes are often, we tend to attribute too much importance to ourselves. And the thing that comes to my mind is a ship. It has to have a rudder. It has to have a direction. In order to have a direction, we have to have chosen a direction. And it may be the right one, and it may be the wrong one. You might give somebody a diuretic because you're not sure why they're short of breath. And maybe the next thing they are is hypotensive, and then you say, ooh, I made a mistake. Well, you took a direction, and now you're going to respond to the direction. I think the most important thing is to recognize that in medicine, with a big M, whether it's surgery, any of the areas, you have to have a direction. And choosing a direction in the face of uncertainty means, well, yeah, you may be wrong. It's not necessarily wrong to be wrong. It's wrong to cover it up and to run away from it. So when it's wrong, as long as you're evaluating what's going on, you say, whoops, I don't think this is right. You talk to your seniors, you talk to your staff, you figure out another direction altogether, and that's the way you deal with it.
So, you know, it happens when you ask an HPI or a past medical history, you forget to ask a question, and then, you know, they review with your resident, and then they'll ask you, so have you asked this question? And then, you know, when there's a couple in a row that you haven't asked, you don't feel good.
That happens all the time.
All the time. But it's very important to say that you didn't ask. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this. Like, there's so many things we can ask, and there's so many things that goes through a resident's mind that has not come through your mind because you haven't seen enough cases. So it's very, very important to be honest, because the trust builds that way. And if, you know, at some point you get a lie, then the trust is over. It's dramatic, but it's very important. Again, we're dealing with humans, we're dealing with patients. So I think that's, in terms of, that's not a mistake, but it's something to keep in mind. And yeah, just like, I don't know, I think Tanya said, even if you do mistakes, and, you know, like, I remember last year I did, like, a medication dose error. And then I was like, oh, my God, I promised myself I would never do this, but, you know, it just happens. And then I wanted, you know, I was afraid to go and disclose it to the family. So then I went to my staff and I asked, you know, how do you want to do this? And then, you know, in the end, you go to the patient and it didn't cause any, like, adverse events, like, une chance. But, you know, in the end, the family was all okay with it. So, you know, we dramatize about mistakes that we do, but just being honest about it, and in the end, it wasn't that bad. So.
I have one of the mistakes that I did was I was in the NICU, neonatal ICU, and I got really excited because the ultrasound results for one of the babies showed something ambiguous, but, you know, it wasn't 100%, but my staff said, oh, yeah, you know, it could be related to, and she named this random condition. So I up-to-dated it, printed out the summary sheet, and was so excited that I knew something, because I often feel like I don't know anything. And I went straight to the patient's mom, and I told her all about this condition, and it was a terrible condition. I was basically telling her, oh, your kid has total anomalous pulmonary vein, and they're, you know, that means this and that. And I didn't think about the fact that I'm telling her that her kid has a terrible heart condition, and I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know the prognosis. And then I had to be honest and tell the staff when I found out days later that the new ultrasound came back and the heart was totally fine. So I felt horribly guilty. I fessed up to the staff, and she called me out on it in front of all the other med students. She's like, guys, that is a huge mistake. Don't ever tell the patient something if you're not sure of it, if you haven't discussed it with the staff, because you're going to hurt the patient with this information. You're going to cause anxiety. Maybe you're excited, but just be careful with what you say. That was my biggest error as a med student.
Thanks. Those are some great examples. I'll get to you in just a second, you two. I think, yes, raised some very important points about being honest. I think that culture in medicine is shifting away from shame and blame to you know, being open and discussing adverse events. I'm sure that's going to be addressed in some of the patient safety sessions that are upcoming. And it's a welcome change in the culture. You know, we frequently have regular rounds when we discuss issues like that, and instead of just saying, whoa, that was a close one, and just kind of sneaking away, hoping that nobody knows about it, we have the opportunity to discuss this for the, you know, purpose of preventing errors in the future and enhancing patient care. There were a few hands up. Wait. There was a... Let me just start. Yes, that's right.
Yes, you.
Okay. So up till now, obviously, involving you and ICF, a lot of the stuff that maybe we find overwhelming or difficult or anything, a lot of the times the way that you get through it is to sort of band together with other students. And unfortunately, it's happened all the time that either administration or people that are in charge can't really help you or don't help you with certain things that you really need to rely on fellow students. But now that we're in clerkship, obviously things are a bit different. A lot of the times you're on your own or you're not with other students. So sort of how do you resolve situations like that, or is there still that rapport between students in your rotation and other rotations? Like how does it work? Do you feel like you're sort of alone and you don't have that anymore? Or that support system still stands? Like how do you work with that?
I'm just going to repeat the question.
I'm going to summarize the question. And just in terms of the difference between the classroom where you're all together and if there are issues that arise, you have a large peer group to draw support from. What happens in clerkship where you might be the only student on the service or part of a team that involves other residents and attending staff? Who do you turn to when you have problems? Can you still network with your fellow students? How do you deal with that? Anybody want to address that issue? Whether you feel more isolated than you have in the past, and what kind of resources are available in terms of peer support?
I don't ever remember being alone. Like, there's always at least two of you around, but usually the groups for rotations are like four or six or eight or something. So there's a small group of you. So you do feel isolated, I guess, generally speaking, because you don't see your classmates every day, like all of them every day, but you do see a small group of them every day. And you do get closer to them. It's a great opportunity, actually, because you may not have spent much time with those people before, so you get to know a lot of different people in the class, and you get to be really close with each other because you're your own support system when you're in your rotations. So I don't think I ever felt alone. Like Mireille and I, we were in ICM together, and then we did a couple other rotations together, and you become closer with people, and you use each other for help and for support. So you definitely have that.
Yeah, you really do get close to the group you're with. Hopefully you'll all have a good group with people that are hardworking. But yes, you do get very close. And I did lose a touch with a couple of my friends because, again, we get so busy. The hours are crazy. But I think it's good to find, you know, that one or two person that's, you know, going through the same subject as you, like, let's say, Obsgyn. And, you know, even for studying purposes.
You see each other at recall days.
No. You make very, very good friends during clerkship.
I think much as in life, I mean, you're going to have great teams and you're going to have less great teams, you're going to have lousy teams, and that's okay. I think it's maybe even more so than sitting in these rooms, you're going to bond into something, even if it's into a group that hates each other. But I'll tell you, it's funny that every time I round on a service, whether no matter where it is, you're in a situation where you walk into a room on day one and you know very few of these people standing there. And they could be you as a student and all the way up from the juniors to the seniors, and they don't know me. And 4 weeks later, you're going out to dinner together and you really know each other. I'm not going to say it's all rosy and you're going to love everybody on every team. No, that's not going to happen. But in terms of bonding, this is kind of like war zone. You're actually out there. It's, I don't say that in a bad way. It's kind of a very team building. It really matters in the team more so than it does in this kind of room. So I hope that what you're heading towards are some of the best experiences of the early part of your career.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that, you know, working in teams, working closely in teams under sometimes stressful situations can actually bring you close together with your teammates. Another important resource I'd like to remind you all is is the Osler Fellow Groups, you know, that you meet periodically with the same group since first year. And I think that becomes, I know around this time it becomes more challenging to schedule, but I think it becomes even more important, you know, and for my own group as a group leader, that was an opportunity for many of the students to discuss exactly the issues that you're raising here. Specific experiences, situations, that was the forum that we used to discuss these issues. So I'd encourage you all, you know, if there are things or any concerns during clerkship, feel free to bring them up during your Osler group meetings. That's the ideal setting for that. I wanted just to ask, wait, there were a couple other hands before I move on. Yes, there and there. Go ahead.
I just wanted to know if there are things
that's my next question. You guys are great. Not a plan. So to repeat the question, what do you think are some of the strong qualities of a clerk? In other words, what qualities would you look for in a medical student working with you? Great question. Thanks for the prompt.
All right. I can start. Yeah. I think we mentioned it before, but I think if you see that the student cares, you know, even though they're not paid for this job, as long as I see that somebody cares, and this can be shown as, you know, like the patient has a problem, chest pain, and then I don't know, I don't like seeing a student come to me, oh my God, he has chest pain, and then okay, then what, you know? Like, have you gone to see the patient? Have you examined? Have you asked them what are the vitals? So I think, you know, it's easy initially. You know, if there's chest pain and it looks terrible, just come and grab us. Like, there's no waiting. But I think I really like to see a clerk that sort of, you know, tries, gets the information, thinks it through, and then comes to me. And that shows that they care. It's not just like kind of relaying information just like another health professional would do. So I think that's it. I mean, you know, as a for me, that's a bit personal. I don't know if you agree, but the knowledge base as a student, we know it's going to go. It's going to increase as the weeks go by. So I never expect, like, a lot. You know, we're here to learn. You learn bomb, but then the reality is much different than bomb. So, you know, it's a learning curve, and I think the most important thing to me is to see that the student has, you know, cared, and even though you don't know all the answers, that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I think so many times you're not just transmitting information, you're taking history and transmitting, but you'll be often asked, so what do you think about that? So I think that's great if you give it some thought before just relaying information, that will make a positive impression. Tanya, what do you look for in students?
I'll just give you a little quote from one of my either juniors or seniors when I was a clerk. I didn't really think through what was happening because probably I didn't know and I didn't take the time. I was worried and I was like, oh my gosh, this patient, you know, for example, chest pain. And I didn't think of what my differential was and what my plan was. And so I just sort of relayed information. And whoever it was, junior or senior, they were like, interesting. So what do you want to do? You can't just tell me what the facts are, because anyone can tell me that. The nurse can tell me that. But you're a doctor. What are you going to do about it? So always try to think of a plan, an impression and a plan, before you go and talk about it to your junior or senior. What I used to do is like get all my database and then leave the top part of the consult blank. Don't do that. Write an impression and plan. Put yourself into the habit of doing it, because then it'll just make you a better clerk because you'll understand things more.
Write it on a different paper.
Yeah, okay. You're right. Yeah. But definitely write it down so that you commit to it and you're like, this is what I think, and A, B, and C are what I'm going to do to rule stuff out or rule stuff in. But the other thing also is that it's good as a clerk to take initiative. If you know something needs to be done, go and do it, or go and get the information. And then, you know, like for example, if a patient is obstructed, has a bowel obstruction, and you've seen the consult, and you know what needs to happen, an NG tube needs to go in, and you know that you need to get a certain number of NG tube insertions so that you can click on it on 145. Go and grab the materials, and then take your resident by the hand and say, okay, we're going to go and put this NG tube in. So like just be proactive, take initiative, show that you're interested and that you care, and ask a lot of questions. Not too many questions. Like don't ask a question every 5 seconds, but like we like to most of us like to teach, and we like to, you know, see that you're interested in learning.
David, anything to add to that?
I was just going to, most of you stole what I was going to say. I always use the term get out on the plank. I mean, you got to get out on the plank, and most anybody could list the differential, but it's sort of what am I thinking, and I think we should, I mean, you can be timid about it, maybe if you want to be, but, you know, you don't have to be. You could say, I think this is this, and this is what I'd like to try, and so that your opinion is out there. And on the clinical services, if you ask me the question, what I think is a mark of a really good, I wouldn't say clerk, I'd say physician, because you people are physicians, okay? You happen to be clerks now, you're going to be juniors and seniors very soon, is you're in the room. I can tell in 2 minutes who's bullshitting me, who hasn't been in the room. If you have been in the room once today and you've seen the patient, you don't have to know what's wrong, but you're going to know, oh, he's okay, ooh, that's sick. And you don't have to know what's wrong. You have to have been in the room to see the patient to go, hey, Mark, the guy doesn't look good. And that's really important. So get in the rooms. If you'll see a million on all the electronic medical records, and in everybody's breathing at 12. Well, nobody breathes at 12, okay? So if you want to know the vital signs, well, you know what? You got to take them yourself. So if you've done that, you are so far ahead of everybody. That's fantastic. So I would encourage that.
Don't wait for the nurse to take the vital signs, because she'll go and look at her sheet and she took them like 4 hours ago, and she'll tell you what they are, and then you'll think, oh, okay, that's not so bad. Go to the room, see the patient. If there's no one there, grab one of those little vital machine thingies and take the blood pressure yourself. We often forget about that because we think, okay, the nurse has done it. But I've had two experiences in the past month where I've gone to see a patient. There's been no one around. The patient is not responding to me. I take the blood pressure. It happened just this weekend. I was on call, and I had a patient who was septic, and her systolic blood pressure was like 40. And she had been okay like half an hour previous when the nurse went to check on her. So just go and see your patients.
Yeah.
I think generally speaking, to be a good medical student, the biggest thing is to feel responsible. It'll be so easy to pass the buck. You'll want to pass the buck every time because you're scared, you don't know, you're hit with this information, what do? I'll just pass it on to the resident. But and you guys probably will do that for your first few rotations. It's okay, it happens. But your goal is, okay, I'm going to get up in the morning. I'm coming early because I want to pre-round and take the time that I need to take the vitals. Everyone takes a little bit different. Okay, I need to check the labs too. And then you want to be, like, if you think of your patient in mind, you want to be eager to do stuff for that patient. You want to ask the resident questions like, okay, so what does this mean about prognosis or whatever? Don't ask them questions that you could look up yourself. Sometimes they get annoyed of that. But if you're keen, if you think that you have a little bit of time to look up something right before you present a case to the resident, that'll make you sound a little bit smarter, that you know a little more about the case, go for it. That's what makes a good med student.
And the other thing, I just want to echo what Sam said. She said that you'll often feel scared and you'll often want to pass the buck. You'll often feel inadequate, as Dr. Hornstein said. And this is all normal. So, like, every rotation you start, you're going to feel like crap the first week because you don't know what anything is about. You don't know who you can talk to, etc. But don't get down on yourselves. Just keep your self-confidence in check, and it'll all be okay. You'll be okay.
Great. Thank you. I know there was another hand up in the back. We'll start in the back, and we'll work our way back down. Okay.
I've heard a few times they say, oh, pre-medical students are so green. I often think that the psychological aspect is super important, and I wanted to relate everything about it in my case report. And I was just wondering, when you say green medical student, is it annoying green? Annoying green? Stay green or stay in the middle? Or is it okay to still ask about the psychological aspect?
and what you see your family situation and stuff like that. Do not want to hear about it.
Okay. Well, so I'm just going to repeat the question. I think you're asking, is it okay to ask about psychosocial information when you're doing a history? Or does the senior just want to hear the facts and the salient information? I would say that I would continue to ask. I think if you're going to explore your patient's situation, you may learn things about them that no one else has yet, and that might enable you to figure out what's going on with them from a diagnostic point of view and therapeutic point of view. But I'll pass it along to the panel, particularly to the residents, in terms of what they want to hear and what they could do without when you present a case. Mireille and Tanya, are you still interested in hearing about the family situation, or you just want to know, when the fever started and how long the symptoms have been lasting, and whether they ate any exotic foods? What is it that you expect from a history, and what can be left out, if any?
I mean, an internal medicine is actually very important. And in every field, in surgery too. It's just that maybe the feeling you get is that, it's very, very busy service, very, very overwhelmed, okay? And then there's so many patients on the list, there's so many people we need to see, and then, you might go into these details and your resident might be like, okay, let's go, because they're stressed, they're overwhelmed, they have pressure, they have to go to the OR. So it's always important, the social story, because, that's the patient. It comes with the patient. It comes with their symptoms. It comes with everything. So, no, I mean, I never heard that word green, ever. But, no, you should never stop to know your patients. And it's sad because, I'm getting older and you're getting more patients on your list. And I'm missing sometimes, the time I used to have to actually go to the bottom of things. The social, stories. So, no.
It may be a good idea to not tell them that when you're reviewing the consult for the first time, but it's good to document it. Like when you're writing your consult up, you write like ID, 89-year-old female lives at home with husband or something like that. Like it is important, because it's not important like right now, but it's important later on, because you'll see the culture is to sort of, as soon as you admit somebody, you need to think of discharge. So it's good to know if they come from a residence, because then you can usually send them back to the residence. But if they're at home and now they're really deconditioned and they need, rehab or whatever, they may need placement. Like, it's good to know all of the social aspects so that you know who you need to get on board with that patient, like occupational therapy, physiotherapy, social work, it's important. And it also just puts into context the patient as a whole. So it's extremely important. But it might not be important right from the beginning. But it's still, you should still get that information.
I was going to, I think it's probably the most important stuff. First of all, anybody calling you green wishes they were as green as you were, okay? And I think that, I do internal medicine and I do critical care, all the bells and whistles, monitor, all this all crap and lines and stuff. I cannot practice that well if I don't know who this person is. Mm-hmm. You need to know that. And you'll all go on the rotations and take over patients. I'll say, okay, here's your three patients. And you go to the chart and you open up the chart and you're going to read a bunch of fiction. You're going to read a bunch of inaccurate fiction that's been copied by one person over and over and over from the first emergency room note all the way. But then if you go talk to the person, you're going to find out, ooh, this is completely different. And I'm sorry, but you can't practice medicine without knowing who this person is, where they came from, what their cultural belief is, how they see this illness, and where they were. If you're trying to take this guy who was bedbound and turn him into Ben Johnson, it's not going to work. So I think those details are vitally important. You walk into the room and you find the blood pressure is 40. It's not the time, right? Okay. But you really need to. I will often not remember the details of this guy's pneumococcal pneumonia. Did he have an empyema or not? I can't remember. But I'll remember that he has a tailor shop down on Chabanel Street. And I don't know why that works for me, but knowing who they are and what they do in life helps me treat them, whether they're in septic shock or have a cholecystitis. So it's very important stuff.
Just in terms of presenting, though, to get back to your question, it's really good for the med students to go and ask about all these questions about the patient, but presenting about a patient to your resident or to the rounds, that is an art. I still don't know how to do it well, and it's really like, you don't know what's important in the beginning. That's okay. But the main thing, which is what everyone's saying here, is that we all know that it feels good to be cared for, it feels good to be liked and understood, so we could reciprocate that with the patients. But presenting, it's going to take time for you to develop. Just keep an ear out for how your residents do it on rounds, and as much as you try and make mistakes, you'll get it too.
And everyone will want it presented a different way. Yeah. You'll never please anyone.
I would say take that information for yourself. And it really depends on the service that you're on and actually the staff that you're with and things like that. Just scale your presentation to that, but it's always useful to have that information for yourself because really it can be useful later on and you can look like a rock star.
Right. Who doesn't want to look like a rock star?
Exactly.
I think we'll take one more question and then, you know, we'll wrap up soon, but if anyone wants to come down and talk afterwards, feel free. We'll take your question right here.
I'll take yours too after. So,
in your presentation, you mentioned about being swamped with work and 80 to 110 hours a week. And my question is rather, do you ever feel like giving up? And how do you keep sanity in your life?
Did you guys get that?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. Since I'm the one that said that, I guess I should maybe elaborate on that. If I'm being perfectly honest, I think in about the second to third month of clerkship, I was like looking for the exit. I was like, I don't care about a 5-year residency. What's the like easiest family med residency to get into? And how soon can I be done with this? I'm being honest. It changed though. I'm different now. And I know like a lot of people here are used to doing a lot of extracurriculars, are used to being involved in a lot of things, and yeah, you kind of might not be able to manage all that when you're working so many hours a week. But people will start talking about balance, and it's something that you might not realize is possible, even if you're working that many hours a week. So if you find that balance, then it's like it's no problem.
I think that's important, and I think, you know, that sense of balance, that's something we struggle with throughout our training and careers. You know, we have the symbol of medicine, of the staff and the snakes. I think there should also be a juggler in there somehow. But I think, you know, you hear a lot about work-life balance, and one of the things I would just add to that is that I would caution you against thinking of it as one or the other. I think once you get into that mindset that work is something just to be endured so that you can go out and enjoy other stuff, you set yourself up for a lot of difficulty ahead. You know, many people do live their lives. They just endure their work, and it's a temporary thing. It's a stepping stone. This is your life, and your work is a part of your life. It's not something you do so that you can do something else. It's a part of your life, and figuring out how that work balances in with the rest of your life is an ongoing challenge. And I think that's one of the themes that we're going to revisit, I think, throughout the third year and many future sessions. But it's a very important one, and I think that's something that we all struggle with, not just now, but throughout our careers. And thanks for that question. I'm going to take one last question here.
If there's one thing you could change about your clerkship experience, what would it have been? Whether it's something you should have done, or you could have done, or the way you acted, or whatnot.
Good. So the question I'm just going to repeat, if there's one thing you could have changed about your clerkship experience, something you should have done or shouldn't have done, kind of what do you know now that you would have done differently kind of question? Great. Great question I think we can close on. And if I'll open that to all the panel members. Anything you want to reflect on?
I would have loved to have a session like this. Because I remember that terrible sinking feeling that I got early on. It doesn't mean you'll get it, but I think to answer your question up there also, the way you, the clerkship is a transition. It's an out of your comfort zone period of time. So you just have to remember that when you're feeling that lousy feeling, if you get that. You may have this great experience, but you may have very low moments. But remember that that's not the 20 years that are going to follow. Because I do remember sitting there going, if this is what it, I had the same like you, if this is what this feels like, I got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of acknowledge that and then say, this is a transition point, roll with this, and something will come. We're all kind of guided by what we don't like. But I guess for me, if I'd have known it was going to be that, it might have been easier to deal with.
You're right. It really does sound scary, and some rotations and some staff or residents you work with will not make you feel good. So there is that element, but then and the whole transition thing is difficult, but what's really satisfying is when you start to get things little by little, like, oh, I know where that form is. Great. Feel good about seriously, small things. You could feel good about that. And to echo what Dr. Hornstein said, if there was one thing I would have changed, it would just be to be okay with that full week of discomfort every month or every 2 months, to know that I'm not alone. Because a lot of the times I feel like, I mean, we're all type A, most of us perfectionists, competitive, whatever. So oftentimes you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, this student next to me knows so much more, they're so much better, whatever. Just remind yourself, they're not. We're all in the same boat. And the more you remind yourself of that, the more you could collaborate and be together with your classmates, share more, say, you know, are you guys finding this hard? Or like, that was a really rough experience. Talk about it and you'll realize how close you guys are and you're not that far apart.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Like, you need to find somebody to vent with, because there's going to be hard moments. You're going to be like, you know, put in a situation that you didn't expect to be in. You're going to feel guilty. Then you're going to think you're alone, and then you're going to keep it for yourself. But that's like the worst thing you can do, because it can be very, very hard. Like, emotionally, so I mean, for me, my friends and my group, we were very close, just talk. And you realize that everybody has the same problems. Everybody seems like they know nothing. Everybody did the same mistake with the same staff that was not happy that week. So I think it's very important to you know, find your person you can go to and feel comfortable talking with.
Right.
We're making it sound really bad, but I remember I appreciated when I was in med three, or well, when I was at your stage, I had a meeting with my Osler group, and one of our co-leaders, who was a med three or med four, or I guess maybe R1, anyway, she said, like, every first week of each new rotation, you will feel inadequate, and you will feel like crap, and it's true, you do, and I still do now as an R2, when I'm starting in a new place, and I'm not comfortable with things. You're getting to know your patients, you don't know everything about them, and it's hard, because people will ask you questions about it, and you don't know the answers, so it's difficult, and it feels bad, but you get used to it, and you just need to know who to turn to, and like Mireille said, it's good to have a close group of friends that you can vent to. You guys will be very important to each other, because you're all going through this experience, and it's extremely different from anything that anyone ever experiences, what we're doing. So you need to remember that and keep close with your classmates. And if I could offer something that I maybe regret during clerkship, it's that I didn't take enough time for myself. We're all like, I don't know who said it, we're type A personalities, all of us. We all want to study, we want to do well on the exams, we want to look slick and smart when we're reviewing cases with our seniors or staff. But just, like, don't read the book every night. Take some time for yourself. Like, go out on the weekend, you know, go to dinner, go to movies, go wherever.
Your doctor's appointments.
Yes. Oh,
it's okay to take those leave of absence.
In a very long time. Yeah. you should take time for yourself, and don't forget about your friends outside of medicine.
I would say, as well as a close group of friends at your level, it's also really nice to have somebody that's a junior resident to turn to. Because, like, when I going back to when I said I felt like I wanted to get out of it, I was like 3 months in or something like that. It was after my PEDS rotation, which I felt went terrible. And I ran into Mireille in RBH, and then we had a nice chat about that. And yeah, I wasn't the only one that felt that way. So that kind of picked me up, and I feel like gaining from the experience of people above you really helps you get through the process yourself, because you don't have to just like blindly find your way through it. There are other people that have went through it, and they can help you as well get through it. So it's not that bad.
All right.
As long as you have her.
Got that. It's not that bad. I'm gonna stop here. Well, anyone that has further questions, I'll ask you to, you know, please feel free to come on down. I'd like to thank you all for your excellent questions and to thank our panel. I think we heard some excellent advice, and on behalf of everyone here, I'd like to wish you all well with your clerkship. Have a good afternoon.
Good luck.